to Cairo Knights. I got to say, for me, being in the news business, being surprised, actually dumbstruck by a headline doesn't happen very often. But let me read it to you, and I can tell, and you can tell me what you think, especially if you work at Boeing, you have a relative who works at Boeing, or you follow the whole Boeing saga between the 737 MAX and the pandemic. It's Boeing's MCAS on the 737 MAX may not have been needed at all. Now, if you want to know what is the linchpin in the whole problem with Boeing and the 737 MAX, it's the MCAS system, the way it was implemented, the way it was not described, all of that. Joining us right now is the man who wrote that headline, John Ostrower, the editor, founder and editor-in-chief of the Air Current. John, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me back.
So the story immediately, I dropped what I was doing and finished reading it because I've had you on many times to talk about Boeing issues. It's obviously a supremely important company for this area, as it has been for three generations now, actually. Tell me a little bit about this story. And first, for those who don't know what the MCAS system is, can you explain it for them?
Yeah, so in a nutshell, MCAS was determined to be needed by Boeing. It's called the Maneuvering Characteristics Augmentation System. It's a mouthful, but the overall design of it is to make the airplane handle, in the hands of the pilots, the same way as the 737NG that preceded it. And so what happened was that when Boeing was in the wind tunnel and doing analysis on the initial design of the MAX with its bigger engines that sit a little bit farther forward, they found that they would need some type of additional pilot nudge with the horizontal stabilizer in the back of the airplane to help the airplane recover from not as a stall system, but as really a handling system to make sure the airplane recovers from a stall the same way as a 737NG. And it's entirely transparent to the pilot. Well, that kicked off a design effort over the years leading up to the 2016 first flight of the airplane, where they essentially programmed the system to rely on a single sensor for activation. And it was expanded actually in flight tests when they found that it was actually this type of little upward nudging that came along with the airplane came in a different part of the so-called flight envelope. When they were just turning, doing these sharp wind-up turns, which is like, you know, corkscrewing up in the air, versus just flying along with your wings level. So in 2016, they expanded the system and tied it to a single angle of attack sensor to activate. Problem is, in the case of Lion Air 610 and Ethiopian 302, those systems activated erroneously, causing the airplane to get significantly out of trim, which ultimately caused the crews, for a many number of reasons that are very much related to, you know, how they interacted with the systems and what they knew at the time, caused them to lose control, and both flights crashed in 2018 and 2019. That ultimately resulted in the grounding that we had for 20 months on the MAX program.
And part of, if I understand this, and you're the person who reports on this, not me, but at least from what I've read, including in your publication as well as others, that one of the issues with the MCAS system is it wasn't, because Boeing wanted to not have to recertify adding a big system, it essentially didn't tell, other than the FAA, it didn't tell any of the pilots or anyone, because it assumed it would be operating kind of in the background, like something that you don't need to know about because it's not going to do anything you wouldn't expect it to do. Is that a fair assessment?
So the FAA was very much aware of MCAS, and even airlines that were involved in the design process were aware of MCAS. And it wasn't a state secret. But what's important to remember is the reason that it was there in the first place was for Boeing to be able to say to airlines that all they would need to do to transition their pilots would be a short course. It was originally aiming for 16 hours on computer-based training, and actually ended up being 2 hours with no simulator session required. So, because the airplanes were going to be similar enough, and the handling qualities, which Boeing had designed in with the help of MCAS, were going to be very, very similar. So, ultimately, when it came time to, you know, get the training, final training evaluation, one of the one of the sort of most visible parts of the malfeasance that the Department of Justice investigated was that, their chief technical pilot asked for MCAS to be removed from the evaluation by what's called the Flight Standardization Board at the FAA, which defines all the training for switching between airplanes. Well, a lot of that was, had they had better knowledge, they might have included it in the training, and it might have been more transparent to pilots. So, look, there are a lot of what ifs in that side of things. And I think what it comes down to is this idea, when we explore this in the piece, is the idea that the level B training, this non-simulator based training, only computer based training, was driven from this idea. Going back to 2010 and 2011, when they evaluated between an all-new airplane and the MAX. And what they realized was, with an all-new airplane, that it was effectively like giving airlines the ability to evaluate an Airbus airplane, because it was a totally different platform than the 737 that they were relying on. So all the commonality that had been in the system, pilot training, maintenance, parts, all that, manuals, everything, was broken. So essentially, the cost to acquire an all-new airplane and an Airbus airplane was sort of negated. The cost of switching was negated. So they found that they would lose about 30% of their market share really, really quickly had they gone with a new airplane for exactly that reason, unless they had a production system that could deliver at unbelievable rates. And they didn't. So they went with the MAX. And so every single little difference in cost between going from an NG to a MAX had to be minimized to keep the switching cost gap between an NG and looking at Airbus as high as possible. And one of the ways they did that was to keep the amount of transition training as kind of sacrosanct, as low as possible and foundational for the program. And that drove all of this need for the common handling, and everything stemmed from that.
Right, right.
So what, and ultimately, we had MCAS early on, which actually was tied to a bit of another guardrail, which was actually removed because of how it was being implemented. And we ended up with a much more volatile system that had been given additional levels of scrutiny, or at least been given the opportunity to be known to the pilots, may have produced a different outcome. That's something for others to determine, but there's sort of, and everyone I've spoken to, that whether or not, that seems to be the key here to, looking back and reflecting on this and about transparency.
So if
the question,
I...
Go
ahead, I'm sorry.
No, the question that was ultimately raised in the article was whether or not the system was even needed in the first place.
Right, that's where I was
right.
going.
Yeah, okay, good. So then I won't interrupt you there. Sorry.
Well, no, that's exactly what. So the MCAS system was born of an idea that, hey, we want to keep on a certain platform. We know we can sell these planes to airlines. We don't want to give them a new plane, because then they may go shopping for another new plane, because they would have to do a whole bunch of stuff to integrate a new plane. So let's just give them the old plane with improvements. And the MCAS system was sort of born of that idea, if I understand what you're saying. But the story then that you did was that maybe this whole system that they put in place may not have even been necessary. Can you tell me about that?
So it was fascinating to kind of explore this question, because it's one that I've tried to understand throughout the entire process of this grounding. Because when the crashes first happened in 2018, MCAS was sort of building this anti-stall system. And then when I looked deeper at it, and I looked at the regulators' understanding of it, and the pilots' understanding of it, the engineers' understanding of it, it really wasn't that. It was really about how to make the airplane in the hands of the pilots handle the same way. And without getting too technical, there's a certain amount of pressure or force that pilots should feel when an airplane gets close to a stall. And the airplane didn't meet that regulation, because it didn't increase consistently as you got higher, your nose higher and higher in the air. In that same idea, the question then became, okay, so we know that we need a system to deal with that because of the bigger engines, so on and so forth. But in all the conversations I've had since, in the last 20 months, 22 months, really focus on the idea that the airplane itself doesn't have weird stalling characteristics. that they thought it did. I think they observed this. And so it was an observed data that they had. But pilots who I've spoken to have flown the engineering simulator with MCAS not present. Says it flies pretty much like the NG. And it's a very, you know, an honest stalling airplane, is what another flight test engineer told me. And so, you know, I raise this question because, you know, no one doubts there's a difference in handling characteristics, sort of this weird part of the envelope that you wouldn't ever in normal operation be involved in if you're a pilot. So I had this idea in my head that was, okay, wait a second. So there was an airplane, the 757 and the 767, both, you know, Boeing airplanes, you know, one made in Renton, one other made in Everett, designed together at the same time. Boeing designed them in the late 70s and introduced them in the early 80s with the idea that they would be flown by the same pilots. It was a common code, it was a common type rating. And so what they did in designing two different airplanes with a very common cockpit, two very different shaped airplanes, they had different handling characteristics. And I thought, okay, well, if Boeing was able to certify those two airplanes together with the FAA, with different handling characteristics, under the same type certificate,
right?
I would the NG and the MAX be the same? So I brought the question at an opportune moment to the administrator of the FAA. I was in the Singapore Air Show last February, just before COVID really hit the U.S. And I you know, grabbed them pulled them aside at the conference. I said, "Hey, Mr. Administrator, you flew the 757, 767. Why didn't Boeing, in all this process, understanding that and understanding the differences between the two airplanes under the same umbrella, why didn't they just apply for a waiver?" And his answer really surprised me. It was, you know, I don't think we'll ever know. You know, it's up to Boeing to choose the course they want to choose in terms of developing and meeting that requirement. And he finished and said, "But I've asked the same question."
Wow.
And, you know, it was a surprising moment. Yeah, it really was.
We're speaking with John Ostrower, editor-in-chief and founder of the Air Current, an aerospace industry newsletter. He's also a former reporter for the Wall Street Journal and CNN. So, John, if this system may not have been necessary at all, what was the internal dynamic at Boeing that led to it being written in? I mean, was there this – I mean, given – it logically, it doesn't flow, because if you believe the, say, DOJ information that we all have right now, which is that essentially they said the FAA, the local FAA, was kind of in the pocket of Boeing, worked way too closely together, very little oversight, allowed Boeing to stretch its own regulatory work farther maybe than it should have. If Boeing had a tight relationship with the FAA, and the FAA is who you need to impress when you are looking to certify an aircraft, is there any answer in there on why Boeing then would have decided that it needed, why it couldn't just certify the MAX without the MCAS system?
I think in the same vein, it's important just to say that the DOJ didn't actually cover that. They didn't really get into the relationship between Boeing and the FAA. It really only focuses on the conduct of two people. And I think the DOJ settlement ultimately exonerates Boeing and its management. As part of the settlement, the agreement. Right. So, and there are many, many legal experts who said that Boeing got off really easy in terms of the focus of that agreement, which really only pinpoints the role of two employees rather than anything systemic around, you know, how they weighted the necessity of not needing simulator training for transitioning between an NG and a MAX. So I'll just set that aside for a second. I think that's important. But at the same time, I also think in all the conversations that I've had with folks who are close to this, the one thing that came up was there seemed to be a reluctance to embrace sort of the, you know, what this one pilot called a nothing burger. But MCAS itself wasn't that novel of a system. Given their history of using flight control services and control laws. But the question was whether or not they still, you know, one pilot who was very close to, you know, pilot and leader who was close to the return to service process, frankly said to me, he said, you know, the level B, they probably would have gotten level B certification, even if they had talked about MCAS in the training process. So there was something in their own sort of thinking about this that I don't think we fully understand today. And over time, I think we will have a better understanding of it from as history sort of dissects this. But the necessity being why not engage and bring this forward and let it ride and accept that there may have to be some potentially additional training or briefing for a pilot, whether it's simulator or not, just to make them aware of this. At the same time, you know, there's the design of the airplane, which, you know, EASA, the European safety regulator, came out and said, well, when the airplane stalls, it's perfectly stable. We push it to its limits and it's acceptable. So you reckon there still has yet to be a reconciliation of facts by Boeing matching all of this together. In the FAA, in its final report, when it introduced the airworthiness directive that cleared the airplane for return to service, they said, the airplane has this characteristic. This is how Boeing is going to resolve the quirks of that characteristic. They sort of intimated that there was no evaluation of taking it off the airplane because this was the only course of action that they said this directly. There's only course of action that Boeing has put forth for resolving this certification question. So I think the why is something that is going to have to be explored even more over the coming years, because that, I think, gets to the idea of the tether that they felt anchored to, forgive the mixed metaphor, whereby they were driving things to try and ensure that they got that level B no simulator training for pilots transitioning.
I mean, was it primarily, I mean, let's back up then. Could it be just, obviously, it feels to me like what the story is indicating is that it was an overreach by Boeing on a couple of areas. One, on the necessity for the MCAS system, and two, for the need to not reference it so there is no delay at all in this plane getting into customers' hands and being flown by pilots with, you know, existing training, or at least most of the training that they need, the vast bulk of the training that they need. I mean, is the driver on this potentially is just Boeing worried about losing some of its lunch to Airbus? And if Airbus wasn't around, maybe Boeing would have taken a little more time on this. Is that the implication?
I don't know if we'll ever know. I think certainly when we understand the history, the origins of this came down to the idea of preserving market share and the concerns about flipping Boeing customers to Airbus. I think that was a big part of it. Absolutely. And you can see that as a thread running through the development process.
Right.
You know, in terms of, you know, having MCAS as a tool on the airplane to use in this way, that is a question that I think, like I said, has not yet been fully understood or explored. And frankly, Boeing has talked about what has related to the handling qualities of the airplane and the certification requirement around the handling qualities of the airplane. You know,
right.
The FAA believes it needed to be there, but at the same time, they've also said that the airplane is acceptable pretty much, you know, same as the NG in that regard. So there's still questions about this that are unreconciled that I think are going to be worth understanding and exploring even more in the coming, you know, weeks, months, and years.
That is John Ostrower, editor-in-chief and founder of The Air Current. If you pay attention or care to pay attention to anything involving Boeing or the aerospace industry, you really should subscribe. John, thank you again so much for joining Cairo Nights.
My pleasure. Thanks, Mike.
Coming up on Cairo Nights after the break, of course, Random Question Robot. Stay tuned.